Welcome to Baby Boomers Radio, a celebration of the greatest generation, boomers and seniors. Here we talk about current events, politics, food, health and wellness, shopping, entertainment, history, scams, and even technology. Boomers and seniors talking with and about seniors and boomers. Click on the subscribe button and get notice of new episodes as they are published. Click the share button and invite your friends to partake in the friendly conversations. Welcome to Baby Boomers Radio. Hey, thank you for tuning in and sharing these episodes. Today we're going to talk with John Ross from Ross and Schollmeyer Elder Law Attorneys about protecting your retirement savings and also dealing with inflation. John, thank you so much for taking time to talk with Baby Boomers Radio today.
I'm happy to be here.
So how's the weather down there in Texas? You got that Texas twang, and I recognize it. I got family from Del Rio. My family crawls all over that great state of Texas.
Well, as probably your listeners from places like Minnesota and North Dakota can appreciate, it's blisteringly cold right now at 59 degrees. I'm wearing a sweater to keep the chill off.
Oh my goodness, a sweater. That's horrible. So, you know, before we dive into the meat of the topic, can you share with the listener just a little bit about you and your business background?
Sure. I'm an elder law attorney, and of course, a lot of people have never even heard the term elder law attorney. But it's a type of law that specializes not in an area of law, but in a type of client. And basically, you can narrow our clients down to people that have three concerns: people that would like to avoid nursing home care, if at all possible; people who would like to avoid becoming a burden on their loved ones; and then the people who would like to avoid avoid going broke trying to accomplish the first two goals. And so that's essentially what elder law does. We take lots of different areas: Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government benefit programs, wills, trusts, guardianship. So we put all of these things together and try to help people, guide them through their retirement years, and then protect their families after they're gone.
How did you choose this line of work? I would imagine that this isn't something that was on a high school transcript somewhere.
No, not really in the least. I actually, matter of fact, I'm an accountant originally, and went to law school with the idea of being a tax attorney. But it was kind of right as I got out of law school. I was a little baby lawyer, and I was doing some general estate planning, but I started having more and more questions from clients. They weren't concerned about the death tax. They didn't have enough money to worry about that sort of thing. But what they were concerned about was, what happens if, my husband gets Alzheimer's? How are we going to pay for that? How are we going to get through? It was these sort of issues that started coming up, and I realized that there just wasn't any information out there available to people, and really even to the other lawyers. And I really kind of dug into it, learned as much as I could over the next several years. And back in 2005, we started this law firm with just this one focus of helping these folks kind of live through their retirement years. And it's been a wonderful treat. I often will kind of make the joke that this is the only area of law where I can help people without hurting somebody else in the process. Right? Nobody gets hurt. There's no win or lose, right?
Right.
And so it's a beautiful thing. People come to me, they have a problem, we solve their problem, and nobody has to lose in the process. And so it's great.
That's a fantastic way of looking at it. Now, this isn't the first time that the listeners on Baby Boomers Radio has had an elder law attorney in. We've had Rebecca Iman on here numerous times to talk about estate planning, but that's been more than a year or so ago, so we're going to touch on that. But before we dive into the estate planning strategies that you use to make retirement life as comfortable as possible, I'd like to kind of jump in the middle. You know, if with economic times the way they are, I know the listener right now is really concerned with the pending recession and current inflation and the impact that these two things are going to have on their retirement. What sort of planning are you doing for your clients to prepare for and survive or even thrive the upcoming recession and inflation?
Yeah, so this is a tough time, particularly on seniors. I've even kind of joked here recently with some of my clients that who knew that Hank Williams Jr. would be so prophetic when he sang about interest is up and the stock market's down and you're going to get mugged if you go downtown. right. You know, so it is a tough time. And I will say that I see generally about three ranges of clients. I have folks that are very, very modest. I have the vast majority of my clients who are what I would just call middle class. And then I have a few that are very high net worth. But all of these have their own issues, and starting with the folks that are really getting hit with the inflation. You know, people that are living on a fixed income, you know, when your dollar just doesn't go as far as it did, that's a real problem. And so one of the first things, if people are struggling just to feed themselves or to pay their bills, the first thing is to typically look at what benefits might be available to them out there. For example, there's an estimated 14 million people in the United States who are over the age of 60 that are eligible for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what we'd call SNAP benefits. So that's 14 million people over 60 that are eligible for it. They could be getting free food assistance right now. They've just never applied.
How do they know if they qualify for that? How do they find out?
Well, and so that, and there's actually, I've got two or three here. There's another one, 3 million people over 65 are eligible for a Medicare savings program. That's where Medicare premiums are paid for. So, you know, if they're deducting $170 out of your Social Security check, but you can get that covered in another way, well, that's a $170 raise you just got, right? Same thing with the Medicare Part D low income subsidies. There's roughly 30-45% of current Medicare enrollees that are eligible for that, but just don't know it. And with all three of those, you have free help out there. As part of the Older Americans Act, almost every area will have an area agency on aging, what they call AAA, but not the same AAA, different AAA. But the Area Agency on Aging, it's a government-funded local place where you can go and find out what benefits are available to you and get assistance in applying for those benefits. They can give you the forms. They can do all of that sort of stuff for you. For people that aren't computer savvy, a lot of times they can even help you, you know, create a MySSA.gov account or things like that where you can do some of these things online. So that's usually the first place that we want to look at is are there some, are there some benefits out there that you're just not getting? Because again, that, you know, if you can cut out some of those expenses, that makes that dollar go a whole lot further.
It sure would. I mean, my goodness, if they can get some help with the food, that's the biggest hit right now. I hear so many folks saying, well, I got to make a decision. Do I buy food or do I buy my medicine? And both are very expensive. It sounds like there's assistance for those folks out there who are on limited incomes for both of those.
Yeah, absolutely. If somebody, and it may be, and that person that is having that conversation right there, they very well may be eligible for both of those sort of things. So not only are they getting essentially an increase in their monthly income by not having that Medicare premium deducted, but then they're also getting some free or low cost food assistance out there. So those are great things for people that are really struggling to get by. I know another thing is, you know, anybody that's got any money in the market has watched it drop, 22-25% over the last little while. That hurts. That's a tough thing. You know, for somebody like me at 50, I'm thinking, well, yeah, but I've got, 15, 20 years maybe before I need to tap into that. so I can let mine rebound. But if you're 75, you're not having that same conversation.
Right.
And so one thing I'll see with a lot of people is their budget is, you know, they've got, they're pulling money out of their retirement account, maybe each month, to supplement their Social Security, right? And they probably set this up with their financial advisor years ago. And that's kind of their little budget, pull some money out of that retirement account. I also find that a lot of these people have some cash nest eggs. They got a CD over at the bank, and that's their kind of, I'm not going to touch that. That's my zombie apocalypse money, right? My grandfather always kept way too much money in his checking account. But I see a lot of, particularly retirees that'll have cash resources. You know, right now with the stock market down, there's no reason to be pulling money out of your investment account if you have cash available. Because you're essentially getting less, right? I mean, if your investment accounts are down 20%, then you're pulling that down a whole lot faster right now. Whereas if you reached over and tapped that cash, that's usually a better alternative. You know, we have a tendency to just do whatever we've been doing, but this may be a good time to reevaluate where they're getting their monthly money from. Instead of pulling it out of that IRA, maybe they need to be looking at some of their cash savings.
You know, it kind of brings me to one of your core services. You know, when I was preparing for today's interview, I read your website and read some stuff that you had posted online. And we'll talk about your podcast here in a few minutes. But you guys are really known for asset protection strategies. Can you expand some on the types of things that you help your clients with in that regard?
Right. Well, and I will say where the original our original asset protection concept came mostly as it related to the catastrophic impact that the medical needs of seniors can have. You know, you know when you get to retirement age, you get to 65, you qualify for Medicare, and you're paying for that supplement, or maybe you're lucky enough to be a retired military or something and you get TRICARE, and so for the most part you're thinking, well, you know, at least my health care costs are mostly covered. But then you get into things like Alzheimer's, you get into stroke, and you find that while Medicare may pay for that hospitalization, it's not going to pay for somebody to sit there with you in the home all day long, waiting until you get hungry and fix you a meal, or you need to go to the bathroom and pick you up off the couch and put you back, right? And what they find is that stuff becomes extraordinarily expensive. And while there are government programs to pay for these sort of things, there's the Medicaid or in California, Medi-Cal. These are need-based programs. When I say need-based, they're typically very, very strict and very stringent. Often where you can have little or no savings. And the problem I've run into, or the thing that I've always thought was, you know, I was in the Marines, and when I was in the Marines, they'd say, John, I don't know what you're complaining about. You got three hots and a cot, right? I've got food in my belly and a roof over my head. And the reason I was complaining as that young Marine was because there's more to life than three hots and a cot.
Amen to that.
And if I have depleted my resources down to nothing, well, yeah, okay, there are these Medicaid programs that can step in and provide that home-based care or that assisted living care or nursing home care, whatever I need. But if I've depleted my assets down to nothing, then I have no way of improving my quality of life over and above what those government resources are taking care of. And so that's where, you know, being able to almost have your cake and eat it too, right? Being able to preserve some cash resources or some investment resources that could be used to improve the quality of your life during those retirement years without negatively impacting your access to government benefit programs. That is when we talk about asset protection, most of the time, that's the context right there. So, you know, we're not, I'm not worried about people getting out there and getting sued necessarily, although that is a certain practice area that we do, but this is really the bread and butter.
So how does somebody do that?
Well, a lot of it is going to be very individualized. You have to look at the person's situation, their dynamics, their income, their assets, and then also then the location that they're in. Because these rules do vary from state to state. Medicaid is a federal program, but it's administered by each state, and each state has some flexibility in how they interpret those rules. But often you will see the use of things like trusts. You know, and all a trust is a stack of paper. It's just a stack of paper with that somebody creates, that somebody's in charge of, and that somebody or some group of people receive a benefit of. But a properly designed trust can allow somebody to preserve resources without those resources counting towards their eligibility for Medicaid. You know, and so, you know, you're kind of looking at a situation like right now where, you know, the economy's down. Somebody may have thought, well, you know what, I have enough of my own resources that I could pay for long-term care if I needed it in the future. Well, maybe that's what their thought was in January of this year. But, you know, in November of this year, they may be having a different opinion on that with their account down 25%.
Right, with the stock market in disarray,
Right, exactly. So maybe, you know, maybe now is the time to say, you know what, I need to take some steps and get with somebody who knows how to do this and see about what alternatives I have to protect some of my resources just in case.
So real quick, just for the listener benefit, can you talk a little bit about the difference between a will and a trust?
Sure. You know, from a very simple standpoint, a will is going to say, here's who gets your stuff when you die. Well, that's fine. It's often better than nothing. The other thing about a will, and this is probably one of the most misunderstood aspects about wills, is that it actually takes two things for a will to be valid. The first is you have to die. Well, that should be relatively obvious, right? But the second is no will is actually valid until it has been admitted to a court through the process that we call probate, and this is what occurs after death. That process can be extremely time-consuming. It can be extremely expensive. And that also depends somewhat on the state that you live in. In Texas, for example, our probate process is relatively simple and only takes about 4 months. But as I understand it in California, it's quite a process. In Texas, lawyers generally would charge by the hour, but in Arkansas, for example, the attorneys can take a percentage of your estate, and I think that's also the same way in California. So that's, you know, the will says, here's who gets my stuff when I die, but even then, it's going to require this whole process. A trust can do a lot more than that. A trust can potentially shield assets for you while you're alive. It can provide management of those assets during your incapacity. Assets that are in a trust pass according to the terms of the trust at death, so that generally would alleviate the need for having to probate a will and having to have that court process. That's going to speed the transition up. That's typically going to save money on the back end. And within that trust, you can also typically provide for beneficiaries because, you know, we hope that we have healthy, happy, well-married, living, financially stable children. But that's not what we should be planning for. We should plan for what happens if I have a disabled child. What if one of them's in a bad marriage? What if one of them is in debt or filing bankruptcy? You know, so we want to plan for what could happen. And that's where trust planning can also come in. So as you can probably tell, I'm a pretty big fan of trust-based planning because you can just do so much more with it than you can will-based planning.
You know, and I can attest to that. When my parents passed, they had prepared a trust. They had everything set up ahead of time. All the instructions were there. I was the executor on the trust. So when it came time, in fact, my father passed away first, and my mom was in stage 2 Alzheimer's. So she wasn't able to execute on her financial matters. So the trust actually granted me the authority to just walk right in, provide the care from the estate as was designated by the trust. And then when she ultimately passed, the asset transfer process, it was just smooth as silk. It was simple.
Yeah, and that's what you want. You know, it's been kind of a funny process that I've seen over the years where I have clients that come in and they say, John, you know, I want to do some estate planning, but I want to keep it simple. I don't want anything fancy. I just want to keep it simple. And I'll often tell them, I'll say, well, you know, let's say that I needed to get my appendix removed today. Well, I could, I could find on Google where my appendix is located, and I've got a relatively sharp pocket knife in my pocket, so I could probably cut that thing out myself. No anesthesia, no antibiotics or anything like that, but it would be a relatively simple procedure. Or I could go to a doctor, and he's going to use equipment that I can't even pronounce. He's going to use techniques that I can't understand, but he's going to give me an outcome that is simple. I'm going to walk in, take a little nap, walk back out that afternoon with three little holes in my abdomen. So do you want a simple, a plan, or do you want a simple result? And, right. And what most people want is they want that simple result. They just don't realize it.
Right. They think, I just want to make this easy. I don't want to overcomplicate it with a bunch of paperwork. But so, I guess I'm going to be a little cynical here just in a moment. If you just want the simple plan, that probably means that you don't really like your kids that well, and you don't really care to make it easy for them. But if you like your kids, you might want to make it easier on them to deal with your estate once you pass. Am I oversimplifying that process a little bit?
No, I mean, I think that's exactly right. Whether you're doing it because you want the process to be simple on the people that you leave behind, then that's certainly a very good, very valid reason. Maybe it's just because part of your estate plan is not to send an attorney on vacation, because your quote simple plan has become so overly complicated at your death that the legal fees are going through the roof. Right.
Right. Right.
Not to be cynical, but I'm in the legal business, and I've told people, I said, look, simple, when people come in, they'll say, can I just write a will out on a piece of paper in my own handwriting? Well, you actually can in most states. That would be a valid document. But it's going to cost so much to actually prove up that will and to make it official once the time comes. And I say, look, if you're talking about what's in John's financial best interest, do it yourself. I'll make way much more money later on than I would structuring this properly on the front end. But I think once people realize that, and once they get it through their head that, yeah, let the pros do their thing, and let them make it as complicated as need be to make your process simple.
Perfect. Well said. Now, I'll just give the listener just one more piece of advice. You could also use this as a little bit of leverage for seniorhood. I've made it clear to my grandkids that based upon how they treat me now is how easy it's going to be for them to acquire the stuff that I've got later. So just a food for thought there. Take it where you want to take it. So what are some of the common estate planning mistakes that folks make? Obviously, not having a trust is one of them, but I get that. But what are some of the common mistakes that you run into the most?
Well, I would say the first one is not having a plan for incapacity. People have a tendency to jump from, oh, I'm about to retire, let's plan for what happens when we die. And they've forgotten about the 25 years in between those two dates. And these days with longevity, increasing, the statistical likelihood of being incapacitated before you die is about 90%. And so not having a plan for who's going to manage things, Who's going to make medical decisions? Who's going to make business decisions? And how are you going to protect your assets from those devastating costs? So that's probably biggest number one mistake. Mistake number two is not accessing the government benefits that are available out there. As I mentioned, the numbers are pretty shocking with, you know, how many people are potentially qualified for benefits, and not just these, you know, the SNAP or the Medicaid, but veteran benefit programs, for example. There's a bunch of them out there that a lot of the veterans just don't even know are available, and their spouses, surviving spouses, don't know are available. So not doing those things. Probably one of the biggest mistakes I see out there is people have this idea that they need to give stuff away. I'll get the call and they'll say, John, I've heard that I need to get everything out of my name or put it in my kid's name. That's a terrible idea. Giving your assets away to somebody else is not protecting it. It's just exposing your assets to somebody else's problems instead of your problems. So that's a bad one. But I will tell you the single number one biggest mistake, and I bet you've made it. I know I've made it. And that's just the mistake of not doing anything.
Right.
You know, you're sitting on the train tracks, you hear the whistle, you see the light.
And you don't move. Right.
But,
yep.
But you just keep sitting on the train tracks. And that's been something that's gone on. There's even an Old Testament story, right? Isaac had his two kids, Esau and Jacob. His whole plan was to leave his estate, essentially what they would at the time would call bestow your blessing, on his oldest son, Esau. But he didn't actually do anything. He waited. He's blind. He's bedridden. And even then, he's not ready to do the planning. He wants Esau to go out and hunt him some food for one last meal. And while Esau is gone, he is tricked by his other son and his wife into thinking that he's bestowing his blessing on Esau when in fact he was bestowing it on Jacob. And I mean, you know, so there's an Old Testament story of, you know, somebody's failure to plan and then their whole plan going awry prior to their death.
Well, you know, right. and that story actually is totally appropriate to now. We have an episode that's in the works on elder scams. We did this episode about a year and a half ago, and we've updated it for many of the scams that are out there now. So, yeah, not doing anything in preparation for what's inevitable. We all are going to die. Leaves you vulnerable to the con artists out there who want to take your stuff away from your heirs.
Right. And you know, and when you hear about these scams, and I'm sure your listeners, y'all will tell some stories about some different types of scams and stuff like that. And when your listeners are listening to it, they're going to say, I would never fall for that. I can't believe people that would fall for such an obvious scam. Well, one, they're not obvious. They're so much better than that. And two, you're assuming that you are then who you are now, and you're not gonna be. The mind, like the rest of the body, it does not age well, and it becomes weaker, and it doesn't work as good. You know, and so just like that trick knee that starts acting up when, you know, as soon as it gets cold, so does the brain start failing you and making you susceptible to these sort of things. In our practice, it's a type of client that we would often refer to as frail, vulnerable, but not incompetent.
Right.
That was essentially Isaac in the Bible. If he's frail, he's vulnerable. He's not incompetent. He still knows what's going on, but because of his fragility and age and stage, he's easy to manipulate or easy to trick. And that's where you see people fall victim to these scammers. And I've seen it in my practice. I've seen it with retired surgeons, retired CPAs, retired lawyers and judges that have fallen victim to these scams, because it's not about who you were or how smart you are. It's easy, and they're getting better and better every day.
Well, and yeah, the documents that they're able to produce now, you can't tell whether they're real or fake. And you're right. It is super simple for folks to fall for it, even if they are still smart as a whip, even if they still have all of their intelligence faculties that they had as a young person. Tell me, look back into your memory bank, listener. How many times did you get taken when you were a young person? We get taken all the time, and it just becomes easier as we get older. So, John, that's valuable, valuable information. How do folks learn more about you and your retirement ideas?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, anybody that wants to learn more about some of this, I do talk about all of this sort of stuff on my podcast, Big Picture Retirement. We try to put out an episode about once a week and talk about all of these different things related to Social Security and Medicare and estate planning and asset protection and all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, on my website for the Ross and Schollmeyer Law Firm, we have lots of blog posts and various information that you can find there. I even publish a magazine called Aging Insight, and you can find links to that free download of the magazine where there's articles about guardianships and wills and trusts and all of these sort of things. And although some of the stuff on the website is Texas specific, I think I get emails from people all over the country because they have found the information relevant, at least as a starting point or a jumping off point to whatever they're trying to do for themselves. So that's it.
So, you know, and I'll include those links in the show notes. So, folks, I've listened to the podcast. It's a great podcast. We podcasters, we stick together. Very valuable information. John, I really appreciate your time today. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with the listener?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is get out there, find you a group of people, find you a good elder law attorney, find you a good financial advisor, find you a good tax person, find you a good insurance agent, build you a team of experts around you, and you will be amazed at the kind of resources these people can point you to and navigate you through as you hopefully have a wonderful retirement.
Marvelous. Well, John, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
We've reached Ed's nap time. Thank you for tuning in to Baby Boomers Radio. Remember to click the subscribe button to get notice of when new content is added. Tell your friends about our program, and if you have a question you'd like answered, email hello@babyboomersradio.com. Baby Boomers Radio is a listener-supported production. Visit babyboomersradio.com/support to learn more.